Shnei Yom Kodem Achag. So we nearly have gotten over Purim. Now we're meeting for Pesach. So I can't promise more than the Haskalah for Pesach for tonight. You know, Pesach is a yontif that needs a lot of preparation at all levels. I had a few thoughts to share. There's a Gemara that I've learned many times. But somehow in the last day or so, when starting to turn my thoughts to Pesach, it struck me in a new way. And I've learned this Gemara many, many times. The first time, more than 40 years ago. Very interesting story. It's in Daf Gimel Amud Beis in Pesachim, and the Gemara relates the following. Who are more than was this non-Jew? That was solid Baruch of Pesachim in Yerushalayim. He used to go up to Yerushalayim every year of Pesach, and with the mass confusion of so many hundreds of thousands of people going, so, you know, people have organized family groups that they knew each other. There were obviously a lot of pickup groups that people just met in Yerushalayim, and they said, okay, we'll get joined together, 10, 15, 20 people, we'll make a Korban Pesach. So he joined one of those groups, and he participated in the Korban Pesach. Omar, and he said, Ksiv, Kol ben neichar lo yoichabo. If you're not Jewish, you're not supposed to participate. Kol orel lo yoichabo. If you don't have a bris milah, you're not supposed to. Vanoho ko achilim meshufri shufri. And I get the best portion every year, the prime rib. He wanted to participate in the Korban Pesach. And he prided himself in outsmarting everyone and being able to participate. Omalei Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira. So he apparently passed this remark to Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira, and that he's a non-Jew, and he didn't realize who Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira, one of the Tanayim, was. So Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira said, "Mikosofu luchom le'awi, did they give you a piece of the tail to eat? You know, you think you got a good part. Meanwhile, the best parts they kept to themselves. You know, next time you go back, you know, make sure the guys that you're with don't take advantage of you." He solik omalahu my aliyah sofuli. So he said, "I want a part of the tail." So omrulei. So his fellows in the Korban Pesach said, "Aliyah, what do you want? The gavoya salka that goes into the mizbeach. We don't get that part." So omrulei. So they said to him, "Man omalahu, who gave you this weird idea to go get the aliyah? Everybody knows in every korban the aliyah goes into the mizbeach." Omalahu. No less than Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira. Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira, this rabbi told me to do this. Omru, my high, to come on. So they said, "What in the world? How in the world did Rabbi Yehuda go tell him?" It's like a guy comes to Yeseda and he walks in holding a McDonald's sandwich, you know, with the chaza, with the roll, and he sits down at your table. And he says, "Who asked you to come there?" "Oh, it's just the Rosh Hashiva of Makil Kota, the Lord, the Lakewood Rosh Hashiva told me to come like this." So, you know, you say, "Wait a second, you know, there's something peculiar here. You know, what took place?" So, both Kubase, Vashkachud Armohai, they come on, Vashkachud Armohu, the Katlu. And it says, I guess it's Chayef Korei, some Misa Vede Shaman, they put him to death. Shiloh, why they put him to death, but they put him to death. That's the story. It's an interesting story in its own right, but I asked myself, what was Chazal trying to teach us with this story? It's a very intriguing story. But the question is, what did it teach us? It's a cute story. A guy tried to eat from the Korban Pesach, and they caught on to him. Fine. But what was the lesson? What was Chazal trying to teach us with this story? That a non-Jew is not supposed to eat. The non-Jew himself caught a two psukim that he's not supposed to eat. So that's not much of a chiddush. What happened? So from that perspective of what Chazal are trying to teach us in this story, came to the following conclusion. Chazal are trying to teach us what the essence of Pesach is, of the whole yontif of Pesach. And it's reflected in this statement about the Korban Pesach. Aliyah, what do we do with the Aliyah? The Aliyah is the best part. It's true, he didn't deceive him. But Alma is Ligavola. It's for the Rabbeinu Shalom. And that's really the Yisoid of Pesach. Pesach is the time that we celebrate Chayrus. Chayrus is an overwhelming feeling for people. You can observe throughout the world, whenever people have felt persecuted in whatever way, or dominated, and have broken those shackles and become free, it's a cause for tremendous celebration. It's one of the greatest outpourings that one can find in any society. A society that goes beyond the Bechairus, in the impact of the society and the life of the people, the celebration, the exaltation is enormous. And that process can be a very self-indulgent process too. That we are free and we're celebrating. And the truth is that in Pesach we have that. Pesach demands of us that we sit like a melech at the Seder. We drink four kaisis, they're a chayrus, in the manner of free men celebrating their freedom. They tell us that the Maril used to lend money to non-Jews, and he would secure the loans with collateral. The collateral was also an expensive gold and silver utensils. And he kept them locked up in his treasury. When Pesach came, he took all of them out and he put them on a table in the room where he had the Seder. So that during the Seder, he should observe this beauty. Part of the celebration of Chayrus. So Chayrus, in one regard, is we indulge ourselves. And in all of Jewish history, at the personal level, the celebration of Pesach has been one of the high points, the high point of the year. As impoverished as society was on Pesach, they spent enormous amounts of money. My father-in-law is a Lazangazan, to grow up in a Polish shtetl. So, normally, the norm of society, and he lived in a middle-class family, but not from the wealthy class, and not from the impoverished. He lived in a middle-class business family. His family owned a business, his father was a sheikhet. They were comfortable, middle-class people. A whole year, they didn't have a gas range as we have. They had a hearth oven. So a whole year, they used to light the oven once a day and cook whatever number of hours it was for once a day. Pesach, they lit the oven twice a day. His mother cooked two different times in the day. Different than the entire year. And he said, I remember his musing as a young child. For all the work and everything that we do for Pesach, just to do this for 1 week, a shud. He says, you don't have this for about 8 weeks at least, you know, run this establishment like this. Except when you stop to think of the enormous cost that were involved, then you realize why it's only 1 week a year. But Pesach, they pulled out all the stops. You come to the house of a Jew on Pesach. Everything is beautiful. China, the dishes, the house, the clothing. Throughout all of history, each society according to its standard, but this has always been the case. Chayrus then can become self-indulgent. In the midst of all of that, what do? The Rambam paskens a halacha. It's true in Hilchos Beis HaKnesses, it's true in Karbonos, it's true in Trumas and Maisers. The ultimate source of it, there are sources in the Torah itself, but in its broadest applications, comes from the last will and testament we have from Rebbe Elazar HaGadol, one of the Tanoim, Rebbe Elazar HaGadol, Tavos Rebbe Elazar HaGadol, where he writes that if we build a Beis HaKnesses, the Beis HaKnesses, what standard should we build it to? So it has to be at a higher standard than we're used to living in. When we bring a carbon, our carbon should be of the highest standard. This was the problem with Cain and Hevel. Cain was a utilitarian. And he said very simply, The Rabbeinu Shalaylam, what difference is it to the Rabbeinu Shalaylam if I give him the most robust cow or the thinnest? What's the difference to the Rabbeinu Shalaylam? Makes no difference. The Rabbeinu Shalaylam is not going to eat it anyhow. So I might as well give him the most meager of things, because good things we people could use. Kayan took, right? Mechalvayan. He took for the best that he had. Rather hevel. A karban is to give away the best that we have, to realize that the Rabbeinu Shalom is worthy in our service of him, that we should use the best. And I think that's the message that Chazal are trying to tell us. The fact that there was a non-Jew, this is a particular incident. The incident is not significant in its own right. What's significant is the comment of Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra. And what's the best portion? The best portion is the Aliyah. If I could get one portion of Yehuda ben Becerra, so that's the part that I want. What do we do with Aliyah? Aliyah le-Gavoa. The best we give to the Rabbeinu Shalom. And that's really the counterbalance to our own indulgence in Cheiros and Pesach, is that the avodah of the Rabbeinu Shalom is also at the highest level. And that really is the yisoid of why in Pesach everything is so meticulous. The level of kashrus is at the highest level of the entire year. Every mitzvah, as we conduct the Seder, with extreme care. Why? Because as we indulge in freedom, the greatest gift that the human being could have, we have to devote ourselves in that same fashion to the Rabbeinu Shalom. And that demands of us that the service of the Rabbeinu Shalom be at the highest level. It reflects itself both in the mitzvah sasei of Pesach and the mitzvah lo sasei of Pesach. We have a comment. Is the Shulchan Aruch, and especially the Gra, is very strong about the fact that if we take any food and we dip it into milk, or it's wet with water, and five other types of liquids, that we should wash the Tilas Yadayim before we consume them, unless we dry them. And the Gra was so stringent about this halacha that the Gra passed in the halacha. The Gra actually recited on the Tilas Yadayim. He had a wet apple. The Gra washed his hands and recited on the Tilas Yadayim. So outside the Gra, we don't go as far as them. The Shulchan Aruch does record such halacha. But the history of Klal Yisrael has been that to the largest extent, people have been lenient and have not washed their hands on such occasions. So the question, and the reason is based, there is one view in the Rishonim that says that this halacha, which is found in the Gemara in Chulin, was not talking about a person eating in his private house, but has to do with the observance of the stringencies of Tumah Taira. And Tumah Taira we observe in the time of the Migdash, and we don't observe now, so this halacha is no longer relevant. So the question arises, if that's the case, before the Karpas on Pesach, we wash our hands. And the reason that we wash our hands is understood to be because we're taking a piece of potato and we're dipping it into water, into salt water. And that's the necessity of the Netilas Yadayim. So that would seem to indicate that we've accepted the halacha that we're supposed to wash our hands. So one of the Achrayim says, the night of the Seder was no Raya. In the night of the Seder, we do everything at the highest level. There are no half measures. If we examine in the mitzvah sasei, our level of observance is at a very, very high level. For example, the Shulchan Aruch actually paskins that if I have a large cup of wine, a large cup, let's say it holds 7 ounces, 8 ounces, how much do I actually have to drink? I have to drink more than 50% of one revius. So let's say for revius, the weekday night this year, revius is 3 ounces, so I have to drink just over an ounce and a half from every cup of wine. And I'm yoytze the mitzvah, that's the psak of the Shulchan Aruch. He does cite a view which states that Pesach is different than the rest of the year, because Pesach is halacha of drinking 4 cups of wine, and therefore one has to drink at least most of the cup. Now, in common practice, most people that are from the health standpoint, capable of drinking Rove Coast, drink Rove Coast at the Seder. And if one would tell a person that the Shulchan Aruch passes that one only needs Rov Raviyas, and it's only a chumrah to keep Rov Kalis, they'd look at you that you must have messed something up. It can't be. Why? Because the observance of Klal Yisrael, of everything to do with Pesach, is at a very, very high level. The same is true on the side of the Lo Yisaseis as well. We have very few areas in the Torah which have, for example, that Iser, the mash, even the slightest bit of something, makes something awesome, but there's no bit. Can't nullify chametz. And a little piece of one breadcrumb falls in a huge 10-gallon pot of soup on Pesach, one cannot consume it. Not both. Which is unlike any other halacha. If I'm cooking the chicken soup this Friday afternoon, and a drop of milk from my coffee splashes out of my coffee cup into the chicken soup, it's 100% mutter. It's bottle b'shish. No halacha, bottle b'shish. Secondly, we have a chumrah, which the Ashkenazim have a chumrah, which is way, way off the charts. Way off the charts. We have normally in the world in kashrus, we have a halacha of nois and tamlifka, meaning that if something wasn't used for the last 24 hours, then its effect on other things is almost, not always, but almost universally irrelevant. So to the largest extent, for example, let's say I took out a milacha kapat, and I cooked the chicken soup in it. When I finished, I realized I took the milacha kapat instead of the fleishah kapat. If the pot was clean, and hadn't been used in the last 24 hours, the chicken soup is 100% kosher. The pot needs to be kashered subsequently, but the chicken soup is 100% kosher. Pesach, according to the practice of the Ashkenazim, as recorded by the Ramon, Siman Tov Mem Zayin Tzif Yud, we do not have that leniency. On Pesach, if I once used the pot, 6 months ago I used it to cook chametz one time in it, it's the only time it was ever used, and now I cooked the chicken soup on Pesach in it, not good for Pesach. Goodbye. We have even a terminology beyond that. The terminology is called Chumrah de Pesach, meaning the stringencies. We have a very stringent approach in the halacha to Pesach. Extreme care exerted. If one realizes that close to 1/6 of the entire Shulchan Aruch is dedicated to Pesach, or the entire Aruch Hayim, 7 days in the year, 8 days, are 1/6 of the halachas, approximately. A seventh of the halachas. 1 week in the year. There's another aspect. So we celebrate the Rabbeinu Shel Olam in the same way that we celebrate ourselves, our own chayrus. We must celebrate the Rabbeinu Shel Olam at the highest level too. That is something else that we have to celebrate as well in Pesach. The Nesivus writes that part of the package of Pesach, part of that package, part of the package deal was that the Rabbeinu Shel Olam would redeem us not only from Mitzrayim, but from every subsequent diaspora that we found ourselves in, the Rabbeinu Shel Olam would redeem us from there as well. That's the package deal that we cut with the Rabbeinu Shel Olam when we left Mitzrayim. And thus, we celebrate Pesach and the Golus. And this is a question that concerned the minds of our people when they began after the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash, and they were Al Admas Nechor. Well, why are we celebrating Pesach now? To celebrate Pesach when we left Mitzrayim, when we established the state and were free men. I don't understand what we're celebrating. On July 4th, we celebrated America. But if Khalilah, the country, is destroyed, conquered by its enemies, then what are we why would we celebrate July 4th? For what reason? Why are we celebrating Pesach? Do we really celebrate Pesach? Because Pesach carries with it the guarantee that whatever the situation is externally, it's all transient, it's all temporary. Ultimately, the Rabbeinu Shalom has promised to redeem us. And therefore, we celebrate Yetzias Mitzrayim, because Yetzias Mitzrayim contains the promise that the Rabbanu Shel Olam will redeem us in the future as well. Rashi even includes a comment, I believe, V'gam Asagoya Shor Yavodu V'gam, as I'll state the word gam, also, almost inevitably comes to add a new dimension. And the Gamas HaGoya Sher Yavodu is not only from Mitzrayim, but from all the Goliaths, the Rabbanu Shel Olam will redeem us. And there's one other thing we need to celebrate on Pesach as well. And perhaps that's also an outgrowth, I believe, of the promise that Rabbanu Shel Olam made to redeem us. The Rabbanu Shel Olam is guaranteed the eternity of the Jewish people. As I often remark, that I teach 15-year-olds. And one of the things I study is global history. So I like to every once in a while take a look at their books to be clued in where they're holding, what they're about. At the beginning of the global history book, near the very beginning, is a list of ancient peoples of the world. The Hittites, and this one, and that one, three, about four or five of them. All of them, except one, one has to be conversant with ancient history to know that they existed and know anything about them. Because in the contemporary world, they long ago faded out. 2,000 years ago, they faded out already. Among the singular ones in that list that have survived are the Hebrews, the Jewish people, the people of Avraham Avinu. The most unlikely ones to have survived. We spent such long periods of time in Golos without geographic area to unite us, without a common language, mixed and dispersed through all the cultures of the world. And yet, the mighty empires of the world have come and the mighty empires have gone. And Klal Yisrael is here. I mentioned recently that the Ponovitcher Rov, the Zecher Tzadik Livracha, was in Rome one night. And a rainy, dark night in Rome. And he finds out that one of his Talmidim is in Rome also. So he calls his Talmud. And he says, I urgently need you to come pick me up from my hotel. I have to take care of something and I need your help. Okay? And the Rebbe called. So he gets in his car. He drives over to the hotel at the Ponovitcher Rov. He picks him up. He says, no, Rebbe, where do we have to go? Where do we have to go? He says, I'm going to go to the Arch of Titus. The Arch of Titus? Okay. Takes him to the Arch of Titus. Ponovitcher Rov gets out of the car. He walks up to it. He looks at it. And he says, Titus, he says, tell me, where are you? He says, we Jews are here. Where are you? One of the most improbable events, maybe the most improbable of events in all of history, that we're here. The Yavetz of Yankov Emdom writes in the Siddur that Chaynavshi says, I swear, that the survival of Klal Yisrael in the Golus shows, demonstrates greater miracles, greater nisim than those attendant to Yetzias Mitzrayim. We celebrate that on Pesach as well. The notion that Am Yisrael Chai, that we're here, that we have the Rabbeinu Shel Olam's Torah, we have fidelity to his Torah, that we celebrate on Pesach as well. That's part of what we celebrate. Part of the chayrus of Pesach. Now, there were a lot of different things to look at in Pesach. A great many. We have, first of all, the very unusual circumstance this year. It occurs, it's one of the most infrequent occurrences in the Jewish calendar, that Erev Pesach actually occurs on Shabbos. Now, for Erev Pesach to occur on Shabbos creates all manner of difficulties. how are we to observe all the mitzvahs? How are we to observe all the mitzvahs of the Chag, which take place on Erev Pesach? Erev Pesach normally has Mechiras Chametz, and has Bir Chametz take place. Now, we can't do Mechiras Chametz on Shabbos, we can't do Bir Chametz on Shabbos, so how exactly we can't do the Bidikas Chametz on Friday night, Laraner, we also can't do. And that's in terms of the Elohis Asas, getting rid of the Chametz. In terms of how to celebrate the Shabbos itself, there's another problem. How do we have two the Shabbos? We're not exactly going to have all the Chametz lying around the house as we normally would in a normal Shabbos. So good. So we'll have relatively a Shabbos of Pesach food. But how are we going to be Mekayim through the Shabbos, which needs Lechem Mishnah? At the same time that we got rid of all the Chametz before Shabbos. So just let me give you a little bit of a brief outline of what's necessary in this regard. The Bedikas Chametz will take place on Thursday night, before Yom Tov. Now the Bedikas Chametz is normally followed by the first Bittul Chametz. So the first Bittul will take place, as it does, subsequent to the Bedikas Chametz. And the reason for that is that our tradition wanted to make sure that we made Bittul Chametz, and that we're afraid that we would forget to make the Bittul in the daytime. So since we're going to do Bedikas Chametz at night, so together with that, they instituted a Bittul Chametz. So even if we forget to make one tomorrow, we'll certainly at least remember to make one at the time of the Bedikah. Now, the Bittul Chametz at night is not 100% Bittul, because we are cognizant of the fact that we have some Chametz that we still want, or Chametz that we're planning to throw to burn tomorrow. So we're not really being mevatel. So it's not a total bittul, but we make a bittul. Now normally, we burn the chametz. The Mishnah states in Sochem that oichlin kol arba, v'sorfen kol chomesh. Oichlin kol arba, and v'toylin kol chomesh, v'sorfen mitchila shesh. That chametz may be eaten in the fourth hour, and the fifth hour is permissible to have benefit from it, and by the beginning of the sixth hour we're supposed to start burning the chametz. So we typically burn the chametz in the fifth hour of the day. Now here is a very anomalous situation. On the fifth hour on Shabbos, we can't burn it. Now when should we burn it? On Erev Shabbos. Now it's very strange. Normally what happens is on Erev Pesach we burn the chametz. Subsequent to that, we have the second Bittul Chametz, and that's it. Then we're finished with Chametz. Now we're on to Pesach. Here, after whatever's mom, we're going to burn the Chametz, but I'm allowed to eat Chametz the entire day and the entire night, which is to follow. So when should I do Bir Chametz? Now one might reach the conclusion that, listen, do Bir Chametz whenever I want. It's different. I have no restrictions. As long as I burn it before Shabbos, then I certainly have fulfilled the din, because it's before the Zman Yisra, I burn the Chametz. However, the Halacha took a slightly different perspective. The Halacha insisted that we should burn the Chametz at the same time on this Friday, the day before Erev Pesach, as we would typically do if it were actually Erev Pesach. And the reason for that is that the greatest teacher of Jewish tradition is not anything that it says in Sfarim, but rather Judaism as it's lived. People grow up, they observe, they see their parents, they see their neighbors, their grandparents, and that's how we integrate how we're supposed to do mitzvahs. Baruch Hashem, those of us that are zeicha, that we actually learn, and we learn from Sfarim, so So we understand from the sources exactly what the basis of all of these observances and all the nuances of them that we may not necessarily learn from tradition. But tradition is the greatest teacher. So we are very careful. We don't want to create a precedent which will confuse someone that's not so fully lettered. We don't want someone to grow up and say, listen, you know, my grandfather was a very learned man. And I remember when I was a little kid, it was, you know, late in the day, it was 6 o'clock in the afternoon, and I was burning the chametz with him. And that's the way he'll go around his whole life and think he can burn the chametz at 6 o'clock in Erev Pesach in the afternoon. The fact that that particular year was Shabbos was Erev Pesach and this was Erev, that's all lost in history. What's striking is what took place. The context is never as striking as what actually took place. What took place is his grandfather went and he was at his side and it was 6 o'clock in the evening and he was rushing, it was about to be Lech Benchen, and he went and he burned up the chametz, and that's ingrained in his memory. And 100 years from now, you try to convince him that that's not the way to do it, and he'll tell you, you're mistaken, you messed something up. I have the real scoop. You know, my grandfather was a learned man, and he was a learned man. So, the halacha insisted that we burn the chametz on Erev Shabbos at the same time that we would, as if that were actually Erev Pesach. However, what changes is we don't do bittul chametz at that point, because there would be no point in doing this additional bittul. Chametz that we got rid of already, or we don't know about it, we're not going to know about, so that we did bittul chametz on last night. The chametz for any that I, for all chametz, even chametz that I left behind and I might not have succeeded in getting rid of, which wasn't included in the first bittul, it's not going to help me to make bittul Friday in the daytime because I still want chametz for tonight and for tomorrow. So I'm not going to do bittul on that chametz. So what's going to happen if I had a challah that I wanted for Shabbos, and then on the first day challah moed, I'm going to find that I forgot that challah behind and I didn't throw it out. That wasn't included in the bittul of Thursday night because I wanted this challah. I did not intend to be mevatel it. So if I mevatel it Friday morning, it's not going to help me either. Consequently, what we do is we do the bittul on Shabbos at the conventional time that we do it every year in Erev Pesach, so that when we're actually finished with the chametz, then we do the bittul chametz. So we have an extra pot. We have the bittul of medika Thursday night, beer Friday morning, and the second bittul Shabbos morning. Now, in terms of the mechirat chametz, the Mechirat Chometz is also actually going to be conducted at the same time that it normally is. Which means in that hour after one finishes eating Chometz, and before Chometz becomes Osir Bano, that's the time slot in which Rabbonim operate to sell Chometz, because no one's eating it anymore. So we're actually going to sell the Chometz at that hour. Now you might ask, wait a second, if you sell the Chometz at that hour, then what's going to happen? What do I do with the chametz for the rest of today? So what we're going to do is to sell the chametz, but the sale should actually take effect right when Shabbos starts. We don't make the sale take effect on Shabbos. It's questionable if halachically we're allowed to. Rabbi Kivager has doubts about it. He claims in the Sechta Bey that one's not allowed to do such a thing to make a sale, even though I did the sale, for the sale to take effect on Shabbos is also a contravention of the halacha. So typically, the Rabbanim will make the mechira Friday morning to take effect Friday night, and right as Shabbos is about to begin. That also means that we do have to exercise a certain amount of care to get rid of the chametz that we kept over for Shabbos, and to do the bittul on Shabbos morning, because we don't have a mechiras chametz which is going to take place after we finish with the chametz as we do in a typical year. That's not going to happen this particular year. Question on it?
Yeah, I don't understand how that's going to work practically. Because, so you think Shabbos morning, the chametz
is yours. No, you didn't intend to sell it.
If there's any crumb around, so only that crumb would be included in what was told.
Well, the crumbs are not a problem, as we'll come to. The Gemara says in Pesachim that pirurim crumbs are mamela batli. They become bottled in and of themselves. The question is, we have to make sure that we don't leave over a large piece and forget to do bittel. Then we'll have a problem if we do both of those things. Yes.
What about people who sell crumbs, like they have an extra box of cookies and they want to put it in a sofa?
So they put it in, I've heard it before Shabbos.
What about they want to leave it out and left
over, is that no good? Normally, you could say the following. What we do normally is say that we give the person the right to buy back chametz from the non-Jew if he wants. So that's a condition that I usually make in the mechiras chametz, that if somebody needs chametz for whatever reason, they have a right to buy it from the non-Jew. So in that regard, we could, you know, take care of it. Who? You know, for you're allowed, in actuality, one is allowed to buy on Shabbos for the use on Shabbos. Now, I don't want to go into it because it's not really normally a practical thing, but there are two simonim in the Shulchan Aruch. One in Hilchos Shabbos, because the sugi appears in Masechet Shabbos, and one in Hilchos Yontif, because it appears in Masechet Beyah, of how one could actually go to a store on Shabbos or Yontif and buy without violating the halach, for the sake of Shabbos or Yontif. Now, it's gone out of vogue because, as one of the Rishonim expresses, in communities where there's rampant Chilul Shabbos, so then we have to not allow ourselves to indulge in such type of things which will further weaken the observance of Shabbos. So we don't actually do such type of things. But the Shulchan Aruch does record in Siman Shin Chav Gimel, and I believe in Siman Tov Kuf Tezvov, if I recall, in both of those places, how one could actually go about going to a store and buying on Shabbos or Yom Tov without violating the din. So that's really, in terms of Shabbos, there are ways, in fact, that it is permissible. Now, what all of this tells us is, Pesach should obviously, the food for Pesach for Shabbos is going to be food that's for Pesach. And how we're going to be Yotzei Lechem Mishnah? So we have, for Friday night, three choices, depending on your minhag, and for Shabbos in the day, two choices. If you're a real litvak, the real stuff, a real litvak, through and through, with no other minhagim except litvish minhagim, so then you eat matzah all the way till Erev Pesach in the morning. Halacha allows the eating of matzah on Friday night, the night before Erev Pesach. If you're a real litvak, so you could actually take Pesach matzahs and use them Friday night for the Lechem Mishnah, if you're a real litvak. Most of the world is not so litvish. So most of the world stops eating matzah sometime before Pesach. On the non-Hasidish world, typically from Rosh Chodesh Nisan, and in the real Hasidish world, many from Purim and on don't eat matzah. So consequently, if one has one of those minhogim, so one cannot use matzah on Friday night. Which leaves the two options that remain. If one is the type that does not want to have chametz in your house at all, then one can use egg matzah. Even though we don't eat egg matzah on Pesach, nevertheless, we can eat it on Erev Pesach, and at least until Chatzos Hayoyim, which is about 1254, I believe, this year, if I recall correctly, on Erev Pesach, it's permissible to eat egg matzah. Now, if one eats egg matzah, despite the fact that we don't eat it the whole Yontif, one can eat it at the regular Pesach table. One has no necessity of eating it in some other place. So if someone doesn't want chametz around and wants no issues of chametz, throw all the chametz out before Shabbos, buy egg matzahs, and one may use them for Lechem Mishnah, two egg matzahs, if that's what one's going to use in place of challah for the Shabbos. One can make two eggs on the Tillet Shidayim on it, one recites Hamoitzi on it. And Lichat Chila, one should eat two matzahs at the meal, and B'diyavid, one should eat one matzah at the meal. And that suffices. Now, if one wants to do this, one can do this Friday night. One could do the Shabbos morning, And we'll come to the Shabbos Shuddas in a moment. One cannot do this Erev Shabbos in the afternoon, but let's deal with the first two Shuddas. If one's going to use challah, then one should eat the challah in some segregated area of the house. And when one's finished, brush off well and get rid of all the crumbs, then wash one's hands and rinse one's mouth out in a place which is not going to be used for Pesach, like in the restroom, and then proceed to go back to eating the rest of the meal at the table of Pesach Dikur Fruits. Now this is fine for Friday night, it's fine for Shabbos in the morning. Now Shabbos, we have three Suddas, and it's rather odd that the Gemara really does not mention the problem. The Gemara mentions the problem altogether of how much chametz one's allowed to keep for the Shabbos. The Shire and Moses stay through this. But the Gemara doesn't talk about actually what to do with Shalosh Shuddos, which is odd. We'll come back to it. Maybe I may talk about it, Shabbos HaGomo, why the Gemara doesn't go into it. But the question is, how should we fulfill Shalosh Shuddos? That is also a larger question which comes into this. Does Shalosh Shuddos have a particular time on Shabbos where we typically do it in the afternoon? Or it really doesn't make a difference. If I wanted to do it in the morning, I should do it in the morning as well. An absolute answer to this question we don't have, and therefore there are two different approaches. One approach is that Shabbos in the daytime, that one washes for Hamotzi, one eats the first course of the meal, then one recites the Birchas HaMazon, and preferably one should take a break for 15 minutes or so, and then wash a second time, eat challah a second time, and then eat the rest of the meal. And that way one will have fulfilled Shalosh Shuddos in the daytime. If one's eating egg matzahs, so one has more time, because the zman, the final zman for chametz is either 10:16 or 10:40. The zman for egg matzahs until chatzis. So one has a lot more time. If one's eating egg matzahs, then one doesn't have to rush. One can wash, eat some of the meal, stop, eat later, etc., later in the day, much later in the morning. I think 12:54, is that right? Yes, 12:54. Another Pesach. Now, in the afternoon, we try to take something in the more conventional time for Shalosh Shuddos. This time, earlier in the afternoon, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, something like that. To have either a little meat, a little fish, at least a little fruit, something else to be yoytei Shalosh Shuddos without any type of bread or matzah. Because when Erev Pesach in the afternoon, one cannot eat challah, one cannot eat matzah, and even according to the Ashkenazi tradition, according to many, one cannot eat egg matzah in the afternoon either. There are those that allowed it, again, and I'm not coming to disagree with it. There's a Masorah which allows the eating of egg matzah the entire day Erev Pesach, but I shouldn't say not minus the last quarter of the day. The last quarter of the day one cannot eat egg matzah irrespective. But between Chatzos, the next quarter of the day, if one's allowed to eat egg matzah or not, is a subject to varied traditions. I've opted to follow the view of the Noda Yehuda to go till Chatzos with it, and not after Chatzos. Ach, the Gemara learns from Ach, that you divide the day in half. Ach, bayom arishon tashbisu sa'ami botecha. The din deraisa, according to Noda Yehuda, basically the Ashkenazic tradition was not to use egg matzah on Pesach. Did that imply, the Ramon two places talks about it, and talks about Mdallar and Tophayin Beis, and he mentions that we don't have egg matzahs. So the question is, did the Ramon mean that one shouldn't eat egg matzahs on Erev Pesach? Or just the Ramo stating the fact that since we Ashkenazi Jews did not eat them on Pesach, so therefore nobody bothered to bake them when we didn't have them around for Erev Pesach either. So that's debated in the Achrayim. So there are varied shittas. There are some that didn't allow the use of egg matzah after the Zman Yisrael Chametz. The Noda Yehuda allowed it all the way until Chatzos, and others, the Aruch HaShulchan, I believe, allowed it the whole Erev Pesach, and I know that the Blazer Silver, the Chatzadik Bevrocha, held you could use it the entire Erev Pesach. So you have three shittas. The din deraisa of chametz begins from Chatzis and Erev Pesach. So therefore, you know, the Yehuda was machmer only the chumra of the Ashkenazim, only when this is man, which is also midiraisa. Others held that since it's not the full isa, there's no isa chorus that's involved, we'll make all the whole erev Pesach, because it's only a chumra bound. So that's generally a description of the mitzvahs that we're going to do, and Be'ezus Hashem, when you receive the Pesach Luach, you should, as Hashem should receive together with the two-page letter on Erev Pesach practices that I've outlined to you now. Pesach is very, very hard, and this one studied the halacha well, very well, to define what's appropriate practice, what a chumras, what a super chumras. They're all rolled together, and that was Pesach. And I use always one case every year to prove my point. And I want to get a strict letter of the law. Just the letter of the law, nothing more. We rarely observe mitzvahs just as the letter of the law, but the letter of the law. You go into a hotel room on Chol HaMoed Pesach. The fellow that marched out of the room just now told you, I just used the stovetop and I cooked chaza soup on the stovetop. Walks out, you walk in, you wash off the burner, it's clean, you forget for a moment it's Pesach, you put down your pot with your chicken soup and your knedlach, and you cook it up on that pot, then you realize, uh-oh, it's Pesach, what's the difference? So he cooked treif with macaroni in it, with chametz, olive gutamilas, on Pesach. And you didn't kasher the burner, and you put your pot down, and you cooked your chicken soup. According to the strict letter of the law, it's absolutely kosher. I don't tell anyone you do it, they'll decide you're a total goy. But according to the strict letter of the law in the Shulchan Aruch, it's 100% mutter. Even mutter l'chatchila, according to the strict letter of the law. The Rambam tells us that for a number of reasons, we have accepted a chumrah upon ourselves that we don't do that. That we kasher the burners first. But that's a chumrah. Just to give you an idea of how far the gap is between what we actually do and the letter of the law is very, very significant.
During the year, would it
be
okay?
During the year, we also want machma lechatchila. But with the evidence in all cases, and throughout the year, it's certainly mutter throughout the year. And I'm passing off mistavra with the evidence mutter too. But that's not, you know, for here and there. Now, first I want to tell one of the mitzvahs, perhaps one of the most daunting mitzvahs we have, is removing chametz from our shus. It's a very difficult mitzvah. A very difficult mitzvah, to get rid of the chametz. Once we're rid of the chametz, to actually celebrate Pesach is relatively on the mild side. You know, it's not difficult, but not so overwhelming. But actually getting the chametz out of the house, that's a very, very difficult task. Now the question is, what are the parameters of what we're looking for, what we're looking to get rid of? What do we have to get rid of? What don't we have to get rid of? It's very, very important to define. And we believe in Mechiras Chametz. Every one of us here engages in Mechiras Chametz. The question based on various practices and minhagim and shitas, do we sell actual chametz? Do I sell bread and pasta? I don't sell bread and pasta. I only sell things on a chashash chametz. Now the halacha states that crumbs, first of all, are bottle in their own right. Number one, they're insignificant halachically. Number two, we do engage in mechiras chametz. So I've yet to figure out why, not Minadin, and not even as a Chumra really, but certainly not as a Chumra that I can imagine people undertaking to do, why people need to scrub, clean every drop of chametz out of the chametz sticker utensils that they're putting away, they're lacking up, and they're selling any chametz there to the non-Jews. Like, what's this necessity of cleaning out to make sure there's not one crumb that's remained in the toaster? I can't figure it out. I'll repeat it. I want to clean it out, fine, but, you know, the amount of time which goes into it and the difficulty, I don't know what the justification for it is. It's, if it's a thing we're going to kasher for Pesach, then there's no stops. Chometz is b'mashu, it has to be meticulous. But if we're actually putting it away, and we're not going to use it on Pesach, and the chometz that's there is locked up and being sold, then what's the necessity of looking for it? I don't know. Of dealing with it in the first place. It escapes me. There's no chia b'dikas chametz in the places where we're putting in chametz to lock them up and to throw them out. I mean, to sell them to the non-Jew. So this that consumes an enormous amount of time and energy and stress, which I don't know exactly what the justification for it is. Now, Ramosh is a tzal paskin. This is at least chametz that's around the house. How much one has to look for. Okay, this has been broadly debated over the doors to what shita. Should one look for every tiny crumb? Well, that's not necessary. But that's with dealing with chometz, which is at least around the house. Not what I locked up, with the, not chometz that I locked up, that's lost in some kli, or stuck onto some kli someplace, which is locked away and I'm selling. But I have chometz that's free-floating around the house. See, the Achronim did debate if it's necessary to clean out every last particle of chametz or not. Ramosha Zatzal wrote a tshuva that the Gemara says Pururim are mele batle. The Pururim are bottle in their own right. So there's no necessity of doing bidikas chametz for them. And rather interestingly, the Chofetz Chaim, I believe in Siman Tov Lamed Gimel in the Shaar Tzion, also says the same thing. The implication of that would be that any place where I'm not likely to find more than a few crumbs of chametz, there's no necessity to check. So for that, for example, Sforum that one is not going to bring to the table on Pesach, one has no obligation to do B'dikas Chometz on them. Now, by the way, the benches that one uses throughout the year, one obviously should not be using them on Pesach. But on the other hand, since you're going to lock them up and with the Chometz and sell them, there's no necessity to bother to scratch the Chometz out of them either. That also isn't a need for. That's a chometz. Now, there are those achrayim that were insistent that one should do b'dikas chometz on svar. Now, interestingly, the Chofetz Chaim wrote a sefer, which is called Machne Yisrael. Machne Yisrael was a guidebook for Jewish soldiers. How, under the circumstances of being particularly in the Russian army, the Polish and the Russian army at that time, that they should observe the varied mitzvahs according to the circumstances in which they live. That the Chofetz Chaim understood the fact that it's a very uncomfortable situation to be in an army barracks on Pesach with all non-Jews around with chometz all over the place. So how exactly is one supposed to deal with Pesach in that scenario? So the other Chofetz Chaim wrote for the soldiers that they should clean out every last drop of chometz, even the tiniest crumbs. And with the Gemara, he tries to explain away the Gemara. That the Gemara is not relevant to the particular psak that he's given. So it seems in two different places he gave two different psakim. In the Machne Yisrael, he gave a psak to be Machmer. In the Mishnah Brura, he gave a psak to be Meikah. And I don't believe there's a contradiction between them. The Chofetz Chaim's point was depending on the circumstances who one is. For the soldiers that were in an environment where they couldn't escape chometz, so there he was very machmer that they for themselves should go to the nth degree not to have the tiniest drop of chometz. So that they themselves should have no laxity in being careful about chometz, because they really have to be careful about chometz, because they have chometz all around them. All the chaverim, their associates in the army, the other soldiers, they're eating chometz. The chometz is all over the barracks. But for a regular person that observes Pesach in his own house, in an appropriate environment, the Chofetz Chaim was not so machmir. The Chofetz Chaim allowed one to dismiss the Purim. That's the way I would explain the difference between the two Pesachim and the Chofetz Chaim. But Rasa Ramesha said, what are we looking for when we're looking for Chometz and Bedikas Chometz? We're looking for significant size pieces, the type of piece that someone might pick up and eat. It doesn't have a shiver, it doesn't have to be a kezayis, but it has to be big enough that we can imagine someone would see it and say, you know, that's worth eating, and pick it up and eat it. But tiny, tiny pieces and crumbs, we're not obligated to look for in the Bedikas Chometz. So we don't have to go pull up the edges of the carpet to see maybe that one of the Cheerios, you know, fell underneath, or one or a little tiny piece of pretzel perhaps fell underneath, you know, in that place. And I'm chuyif to do such things if we're only looking for Perurim. Good, we'll vacuum, we'll clean, Mustavra will clean most of it away anyhow. But there's not a necessity to go looking for all of these things. Yeah, if I had my, what is it, druthers, I'd make a new Jewish holiday, I have to tell you. I looked over the calendar, and there's one Jewish holiday that's missing. So I want to make a new Jewish holiday. So if I had I gain enough support, then maybe I'll be able to make a new Yom Tov. I decided around the 35th day of the Omer, I want to make it. I want to make National Jewish Spring Cleaning Day. And that day will come, and, you know, we'll hire 20 shiksas to come to the house, and we'll clean from stem to stern or whatever, you know, shake the dust out of the mattresses, the face wash, you know, scrubbing the backs of the chairs where the wood meets the padding, you know, all of the things, you know, the unscrew the pads and go underneath, who knows what's there. I proposed this for the 35th day of the Omer. That's my proposal. You know, but I'm still trying to figure out why we had to have spring cleaning week being the week before Pesach, you know. Pesach is a hard enough yontif without putting that problem together with it. Now, part of it was, and I don't mean this in the Chalil and the least bit facetiously, that the Jewish people are very holy people. And they went far beyond that which the halacha obligated. I believe, if I recall, I thought I saw it in the Rosh, if I recall. I've been looking for it for a long time. I believe it's in the Rosh, who talks about the fact that the women used to scrub the walls before Pesach, at the time of the Rishayna. Now, if you looked at it from the strict sense of the halacha, there's really, one cannot find a basis for it. But yet there were Rishayna that, on the smach of a certain Yerushalmi, decided that they have a mocker for this. Now, the Yerushalmi was really talking about something like a hole in the wall where there was chometz and one couldn't, whatever, that type of situation, or a house where you patch the walls with chometz. I think, you know, they may, let's say, instead of plaster, you took a little bit of dough and you plastered up a hole. And now Pesach comes and you have a glob of chometz in the wall. So that's sort of what the Yerushalmi was talking about. But the Rishonim saw that as enough justification that people wash the walls for Yom Tov. So we are a very, very, you know, holy people. And there's a very famous exchange which took place. Rabbi Shaul Leib Diskin had a Rebbetzin who was extremely bright, extremely intellectual, and extremely sharp. And, I mean, there's no question, if she'd been a man, she would have been a rabbi in her own right. She was. But she took her responsibilities seriously. And he saw her once before Pesach down on her hands and knees scrubbing the house. So he had Rachmanis on her, Yeshua Leib. So he said to his rabbi, it's a new Genugshan, it's enough already, you know? You don't have to do so much. So she looked up at him and said, if I would have listened to you, he says, I would have eaten Chomet and Pesach long ago. You know? So a lot of what we do comes from a sense of Kedusha. Kedusha, we cannot be fought. There's a feeling, as I talked about at the beginning of the Shia tonight, of the desire to perform the mitzvahs of Pesach at the highest possible level. We have this two times a year in the halacha. We have this in Pesach, and we have it in Aseres Yemei Teshuva. And it's a very interesting lesson of this. It's not only what I pointed out at the beginning of the shir, that to celebrate chavrus without becoming an exercise in self-indulgence, then we have to serve the Rabbeinu Shel Olam at least to the standard that with which we serve ourselves. Yaakov Kamenetsky, I believe, is the one who wondered why there are more records in the halachas of Aseres Yemei Tshuva that certain chumras people accept upon themselves on Aseres Yemei Tshuva, even though they don't normally keep them during the year. So the question is, what's the point? If I'm intending to keep it for the rest of the year, fine. But if I'm not intending to keep it during the rest of the year, so the Rabbeinu Shel Olam knows that, so what's my point? So he said, the point is, not always are we ready to serve the Rabbeinu Shel Olam at the highest level, but we want to underscore the value of serving him at the highest level. At least that, and I said this to make sure. I'm not ready to serve the Rabbeinu Shel Olam at the highest conceivable level, but at least I want to emphasize to myself how important it is to serve the Rabbeinu Shel Olam at the highest level. It's sort of a longing that I wish that I was ready to serve the Rabbeinu Shel Olam at the highest level constantly. I'm not. So I have to live with that fact. But I would like to be some results. And that's a little of what we express in Pesach too, with the Hidur that we have. As we celebrate Chavrus and give that tremendous Hidur for the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, for the founding of the Jewish people, with Yitzias Mitzrayim, it's a real, we become Hayom Azeni Yesala. We became a nation in a true sense with Yitzias Mitzrayim. It is a longing to serve the Rabbeinu Shel Olam at the highest level. The Ramchal writes that with what should we motivate ourselves to serve the Rabbeinu Shel Olam with enthusiasm? If we consider the chesed that the Rabbeinu Shel Olam bestows upon us, so how can we pay the Rabbeinu Shel Olam back? If a human being does me a chesed, so I can look to do a chesed for that person, I'll help his children, I'll send them a nice letter, I'll send them flowers for Shabbos or Yom Tov, right? To show my appreciation for what they've done for me. But what can I do for the Rabbeinu Shel Olam? Maybe what, he needs a vacation in Hawaii? What am I going to do? What am I going to do for the Rabbeinu Shel Olam? So the only thing we do for the Rabbeinu Shel Olam is that at the very least, we listen to the commandments, we listen to the Rabbeinu Shel Olam's mitzvahs. And the sense of Akoras HaTov, of Odor to the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, gives us tremendous enthusiasm. That's what we express in Pesach. That's an expression of the longing to serve the Rabbeinu Shel Olam at the highest level. Now, there are still, I did not talk at all about kashering tonight. So, Be'ezus Hashem, that will be next Tuesday night. Talk about kasher, and we'll start to get into the real heavy lifting of what preparing for Pesach, and maybe a little bit more about B'dika and Bittul at that time. So good night, Rabbi Yisrael.